Nityananda Prabhu continued, the king also expressed his desire to see the moon-like face of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his eyes' full satisfaction. He would like to raise the lotus feet of the Lord to his heart. Hearing all these statements, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mind was certainly softened, but externally he wished to speak some harsh words. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I can understand that you all desire to take me to Kartik to see the king. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is naturally the reservoir of all kindness, and as soon as he heard the statement made by the king, his heart immediately softened. Thus the Lord was ready to go see the king, even at Kartik. He did not even consider allowing the king to come back from Kartik to Jagannath Puri to see him. It is significant that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so kind that he was ready to go and see the king at Kartik. Apparently, it was never expected that the king wanted to see the Lord at his place. But by way of being externally harsh, the Lord indicated that if all the devotees so desired, he would go to Kartik to see the king. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagunaragunatamvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padhan Sahagna Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Durubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I'll just read verses 21 to 23 of chapter 12 again. Nityananda Prabhu continued, the king also expressed his desire to see the moon-like face of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his eyes' full satisfaction. He would like to raise the lotus feet of the Lord to his heart. Hearing all these statements, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mind was certainly softened, but externally he wished to speak some harsh words. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I can understand that you all desire to take me to Kartik to see the king. So the adventures of Maharaj Pratapurudra continue. This is, Chaitanya Charitamrita is a really beautiful narrative, the way everything's been done in terms of alongside the narrative that's currently going on, there's usually some story arc in the background. So over these last few chapters, we've had the story arc of what's going on between Maharaj Pratapurudra and Lord Chaitanya. Will he see him? Won't he see him? How are Lord Chaitanya's associates facilitating this? And in chapter 11, we heard about how actually Maharajprataparudra is getting to observe Lord Chaitanya and his activities and his associates from afar. And by observing his activities under the guidance of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he's getting to understand the intricacies, the subtleties of those activities and the different degrees of love, the different types of love for the Lord, to a point where he's now, you know, Lord Chaitanya is really trying to bring Maharajprataparudra, and as he does with every personality encounters, bring their love, their relationship with him, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to a fever pitch, to that highest point where it's unstoppable. We all have an individual, we all have an individual and unique relationship with Krishna. It can't be destroyed. Can't be destroyed. It can be forgotten. It can be interrupted. It can be buried. But it can never be destroyed. Okay, and this pastime, that this dynamic, this drama that is going on between Maharajprataparudra and Lord Chaitanya, despite him not having yet personal face-to-face darshan, is a real beautiful expression of the different stages that we can go through to get to that point of our love being at that absolute precipice, at that absolute, you know, escalation. It's even when, and it's really nice in this verse how it's described that Lord Chaitanya wanted to seem harsh, even though actually his heart is becoming soft, because he's hearing from Maharajprataparudra's words, everything he's communicating through his associates, that actually, you know, whatever it is that is stopping you from seeing me, I'll give it up. If it's my kingdom, I'll give it up. I just want to serve you. You know, his desire for Lord Chaitanya's service and association and darshan is now starting to trump everything else. So it's interesting that Lord Chaitanya, even though his heart is starting to begin to soften, his mind is softening, he's thinking, actually, if I want to increase the fever pitch, if I want to increase the intensity of Maharajprataparudra's love, I'm going to still come across as a little bit harsh. Maybe say things and do things that it's not going to be very obvious that I'm softening, but those who know me will start to understand. He's evolving. If you see Maharajprataparudra's journey through these pastimes, through what he's hearing from the various associates of Lord Chaitanya and the different dialogues that have taken place, he's starting to understand more about the philosophy of bhakti. He's starting to understand more about the reasons of Lord Chaitanya's arrival, more about the feelings that one has towards Lord and what they need to be like. And at the same time, simultaneously, Lord Chaitanya's receptivity to receiving him is also changing. He's gone from hard like a thunderbolt, completely resting all of his, you know, conclusion on, well, you know, I'm a sannyasi, I cannot mix with kings and people who have opulence, to now actually thinking, I have to speak some harsh words. His mind is softening. So he puts it, he's explaining this purport, Srila Prabhupada saying, he puts it onto them. He says, I know you want me to go and see him. I mean, there's no question that Maharajprataparudra hasn't said, I want you to come and see me here. But Lord Chaitanya is expressing his desire also that actually soon that day will come where I will be ready to receive you. In our unique individual relationships with Krishna, he is also always constantly making arrangements for all of us, especially when we show an interest in him. We often hear that, you know, how does the karma of somebody who hasn't yet chosen to come closer to Krishna play out? Well, it's basically like for like. And we often hear that actually when we choose Krishna, then whatever's mapped out for us is delivered to us in a way that will inevitably bring us closer to him. And this is what we see here happening with Maharajprataparudra. These arrangements that are made for each of us to bring our attachment and affection to a peak are like a, they're a catalyst. And I'm sure many people here have made paneer, right? You've made paneer. You at least know that it needs the right temperature and it needs an acid, right? Either lemon juice or vinegar. So that acid is the catalyst. You can bring the milk to the right temperature. You can, you know, have all the, you can have the best milk, everything. But until you put, make that arrangement, that specific arrangement, that's the catalyst. You know, that arrangement sometimes, straight lemon juice isn't so pleasant to taste. Neither is vinegar, okay? Neither is citric acid. But when they put into boiling milk, they make this beautiful, they separate, you know, the paneer, the rich, the richest aspect of the milk, separate it from the whey and the water, okay? So these arrangements are like that, that catalyst in each of our lives. Krishna doesn't even for the gopis. The gopis have pure love for him. But to increase that pure love, because one of the things, aspects of prema and purity is that it's infinite. It can only get more. It can only get deeper. What does he do with the gopis? He's in a perfect situation with his topmost gopis. He goes. He leaves. He goes to Mathura. So they get to taste an even deeper love, the one of separation. So he has no favorites when it comes to making arrangements, you know, in our lives. His heart is also in pain when he's doing this. As Lord Chaitanya's receptivity to Maharaj Prataparudra is evolving, he's also feeling the tug of the separation more. When your heart and mind start to soften to receiving someone and yet you have to still keep them at bay because there's a higher principle or something more that can be gotten, you feel conflicted, don't you? You're like, I want this, time is not quite right. So he's also, Krishna's also in pain. And he also feels pain when he has to make arrangements, which may make us uncomfortable. Because he's also making Maharaj Prataparudra, you know, suffer. He's hankering. But that suffering is ultimately going to lead to a great joy. When arrangements are made which seem unfair, okay, because Maharaj Prataparudra's situation, here's Lord Chaitanya walking around every town and village, everywhere he goes, that there's no hard and fast rules to chanting, that there's no varna that can block you, no ashram. Anyone can become a pure devotee. Anyone can have the Lord's mercy. But you, you're a king, okay? You can't have my mercy, okay? And I think none of us are strangers to that. Every single one of us at some point in our Krishna conscious journey has felt excluded or othered because of some human attribute we have. Either it's too much wealth or it's too little wealth. Okay? The person who's wealthy is thinking, hey, in Shastra, it's always written that if you have too much money, you know, you're prone to corruption and, you know, you're prone to illusion and ego. And then people who don't have so much money look around, they say, hey, how come the people who have so much money get to the front of the darshan queue first? Right? Then you might feel discriminated or othered or excluded because maybe you think you don't have certain abilities, or maybe you have too much ability. Maybe you don't feel beautiful enough. Maybe you feel too beautiful. Maybe you feel like you don't have the right personality. Maybe you feel you don't have the right gender. You know, so these, we always have some arrangement in our humanity that makes us feel like maybe I'm being told by Krishna that I'm not allowed to have devotional service. So Maharaj Prataparudra could have easily done that. He could have easily kind of taken offense, okay, and said, hey, you know, he's got one rule for everybody else and another rule for me. He runs around the streets singing the holy name like a madman, letting anyone be around him, touch him. You know, he falls on the floor in ecstasy and here I am. I'm desperate to see him and he won't see me just because I'm a king. Fine, I'll give it up. Let me make friends with his associates. Let me hear from his associates. Let me hear about him. Let me express to him how much he means to me, how much his association means to me. Rather than, he didn't even think about getting angry or, there's not once he gets angry. He gets desperate. He gets upset. And his upset is about the separation, not about how dare he. Okay. There's not this how dare he. So this, but for us, when we feel like, oh, a situation has been created in my life, either a person's been brought into it to remind me of something that I don't have enough of or have too much of, Or situations being created where we thought Krishna had made arrangements for us to do a particular service and that service has now been arranged away from us. Okay, sometimes in very duplicitous ways, which are very obvious, you know. Do we anger? Do we get irritable? Do we get hurt? Do we then start to take steps to rearrange the arrangement that Krishna's made? Now, we often talk about offenses, and the offenses we talk about the most are Vaishnav aparadh, right? Offenses against each other, because the one thing we are told over and over and over again is cooperate with each other. Your success will be shown by how you cooperate, because the spirit of the spiritual world is cooperation. Envy-free cooperation, you know, and in the spiritual world, there's no comparison, and comparison is the mother of jealousy, okay, and jealousy is the mother of envy. So the spiritual world is free of this, you know, very tamasic, rajasic, and comparison is like, could be a very low-level mode of goodness type of comparison, you know, envy. It's free of that. It's completely transcendental. Everything is in the service of. So it then stands to reason, understanding why we make offenses. And there's a real science to why we make offenses. But generally, if we look around, we make offenses when we feel offended. Right? When we feel offended, we make offenses. We make offenses, we engage in harsh speech, harsh words, maybe even very harsh feelings, which then manifest into actions which may be harmful to another person. When we're offended, not when we're peaceful. When we're peaceful, when we're happy, when our heart is full of care and love, when we're feeling nourished, we don't tend to engage in offensive behavior, okay, or speech or thought. And probably the most common, we actually talk about envy. Envy seems to be a little bit easier for us to talk about than another one of the six enemies, which is anger. Shrada Gokul Nanda ki jai, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Kornita ki jai. But anger is probably something we are more familiar with, both in our experience of it and expression of it. And anger has many, many shades. When people think of anger, they think, oh, yeah, anger's just that rage, that volatile, you know, expression, right? But irritability is a type of anger. It's a spectrum. Like there's a what is anger? If we were to describe what anger is, how would you describe anger, the emotion of anger? We're clear on envy, we're clear on jealousy, we're clear on comparison, but what about anger, this emotion of anger? How would you describe anger? Anyone? Okay, so that's a consequence of anger, right? A consequence of anger that you can lose your reasoning. But what is anger? Describe it to me. Okay. Okay, so that's a reason for anger, right? But what is anger? How do you feel when you're angry? Come, let's get in touch with that anger. Everybody's felt it. Go ahead.
Fiery and hot-headed.
Okay, so you might feel fiery and hot-headed. Okay, what else? Burning, okay. It reminds you of fire, doesn't it? Right? Anybody else feel it any differently? You want to be violent. Okay, yeah. Sometimes it makes you want to be violent. Let's put it out there. What else? He knows this already. anyone else? Ladies, don't pretend you don't feel anger. Come on. Destruction, okay. Turbulent. It can make you cold.
Yeah,
it can make you cold. Not detached cold, right? Everybody here has felt the cold shoulder, when somebody's been annoyed at them. But there's a spectrum, isn't there? There's like that mild, low-level anger, which is, you know, as you were saying, things haven't gone my way, right? There's a mild level of it where we're a bit annoyed, a bit irritable. Maybe that's the kind of thing you feel in the house when someone hasn't washed the dishes or, you know, put their clothes away properly, or someone's been ruder to you than they should have been. And a little bit of annoyance there, a bit of irritability. Okay, and then on the other end of the spectrum, we're talking about, you know, full-on, you know, punches and violence and volcano type anger. So there is a spectrum. But as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, when our desires aren't met, our expectations, okay, our plan of how things should be, just like Maharaj Prathaparudra has a plan, right? He wants to hold the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya to his chest. He wants to look at his moon-like face. He's hankering for this, but he's not getting angry about not being given it immediately. And when we have desires in our Krishna consciousness, in our other areas of our life, maybe in every area of our life, where our desires are not met the way we expected them to, either by circumstance or by timing. Okay, so Krishna speaks about this. When our desire is not fulfilled, okay, when lust is not fulfilled, because the desire for just self, our self-satisfaction, our self-enjoyment, it's a type of lust, isn't it? Our plan separate from Krishna's plan is really what lust is about. When we experience that and it's not met, then what arises? Anger. And from anger then arises that bewilderment, and then all intelligence is lost. So when we lose our intelligence, that is when we start engaging in speech and behavior and thoughts that, you know, really perpetuate and are the catalyst for offensive behavior. So I want to, you know, this, I want to unpack anger a little bit more, because anger inevitably, you know, there's always a victim with anger. Always. Even if we never release the anger, we are hurt by anger. We are hurt by our own anger, because anger is not a helpful feeling. It's one of the six enemies of the mind. An enemy is an enemy. Anger's never the friend of the mind. Krishna never says, oh, anger's one of the enemies of the mind on a part-time basis. You know, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say there's certain situations when anger is healthy for us and really good for us and is really going to bring us closer to him. I know some of you, no, but can we not use anger, you know, to protect others? Yes, we'll come back to that. I just want to unpack this, because we do a lot of damage to ourselves, our relationship with Krishna and our relationship with others, devotees and those who aren't yet deciding to do that, because of our anger, our misunderstanding of it, our lack of understanding of how we experience it, how to express it, and inevitably holding on to it longer than needed. The problem is we hold on to it longer than needed. So I was going to do this on the board, but I think people are really present and here. So I'm going to just get you all to ask yourselves some questions. Because ultimately, as we answer these questions, it will help us to get in a place like Maharaj Prathaparudra, where our heart becomes really quite light, and has we have space to engage with bhakti and really try to see what is Krishna's arrangement for us, rather than taking offense at his arrangements, whoever's delivering them. So I want you to all ask yourself this, whether you're typing on your phone or have pen or paper. I want you to ask yourself this. Let's go through this. Okay. And I want you to look at the full spectrum of anger, from irritable right through to actually expressing. Maybe you get, you know, expressive with it and shout, maybe you get cold with it. You have different experiences, but I want you to consider the whole spectrum, from your irritabilities right to full-blown, oh my God, I'm really angry, okay? How often do you get angry? Is it once a week? Is it every day? Is it multiple times a day? Be honest with yourself. What insight do we have now? And remember, our insight evolves as we become more fine-tuned. Really take this exercise. By the time we get to the exercise, you will have the opportunity to really start shifting things and feeling a lot lighter. So ask yourself, how often do I get angry? Think about the times you get irritated in the day. Think about your closest relationships, how you've, you know, how many times you get annoyed at that person for maybe doing the same thing. Because if I asked you how often do you get explosive anger, some of you even may say no, because you never let your anger out in that way. But maybe you're cold. So that's why I'm asking everything from irritability right through to, I don't want you to just meditate on one type of anger. Just reflect, how often do you get irritable, you know? Now I want you to think about, how do you experience it? What is your general way of experiencing anger? Okay, are you somebody who feels that very hot anger? You know, it's very visceral, you know, like, you know, body gets hot. Do you feel anger in a way that's very, it's in between deep, dark suppression and volatility. So it creates an agitation in the body, almost an anxiety, sometimes people get headaches or stomach aches when they get angry because they're not quite really connecting with their anger. How do you feel when you're angry? How do you experience anger? Or are you somebody who, when you get angry, very quickly gets to this cold space and you shut off? Well, maybe you feel all of the above. How do you experience it? And this is important to do because it helps us to start recognizing how often we get angry. You may, after recognizing how you experience it, go back and change your answer to the first question. You know, when I've been doing this and I've been looking at really the full spectrum of anger, I notice whether it's irritability or full-blown anger, I notice an increase in my body temperature. Okay, so I've been using that as a measure of, am I getting angry? Am I getting offended? How do you express it? How do you express your anger? Do you express your anger? How do you express it? And this is unique to each of us. When you're angry, how do you express it? Do you write about it? Do you talk about it? Do you scream and shout? Do you say harsh words? Do you stomp around the house? Do you start slamming doors? Or do you shut down and not speak to anyone at all? How do you let other people know that you are angry? That's what I'm asking you. How would somebody else know that you're angry? Now, this is a kind of, the next question is going to have many answers. But this is something with something that you might want to consider. This question of how long do you hold it? And the answer I want you to think about is the thing you've been most angry about for the longest time. How long have you held that anger? Days? Weeks? Months? Years? Is there someone in your life or a situation in your life that you have been angry about for a really long time? Feeling like, shouldn't have happened this way. It was wrong. I don't see how this could be good for me. Maybe it was something that happened in your childhood. Maybe it's something that happened in your education or your work or a friendship or a romantic relationship. Something that you're still angry about. How long have you held it? We all know we've got, all had anger that we've held on to for just 5 minutes or 10 minutes or a week or a month. But the longest anger, what's our longest? What's your Guinness, you know, world record for holding on to anger? Your personal record best. Get write it down. Do you know, we offload so much when we bring things out into the open. It is a very quick way of burning off karma, okay, and getting rid of seeds of karma. Put it out in the open. Put it on that piece of paper. Maybe later on, tell a friend, someone you trust, wow, the longest I've been angry is X, you know? And last but not least, how do you, for you personally, how do you rid yourself of anger? Do you have a process? What is your process of ridding yourself of anger? Prishna Prabhu?
I usually go to somebody, a friend, to when I feel anger, I go to somebody who I can trust as a friend, as a support, as a feedback. Then they'll tell me if they're a real friend. They'll tell me what they see, and it gives you food for thought. Oh, yeah, I think they're right.
Yeah.
And then that can disappear even overnight, actually.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking about King Parachute after he regretted the putting the snake around the things. He experienced regret. And Prabhupada says in the purport, by sincere regret, all the sins of one's activities are immediately destroyed.
Amazing. Thank you. So getting some accountability, some reflection, Mataji? Can you just wait for the mic?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
First I wanted to say, you have to know what you want in life, and the most important things, what is importance in life, if you understand that you are a soul, Sat Chit Ananda, you have to understand that this is a very basic, but it's very nurturing truth in that, because when you know who you are, you understand it's okay to get angry. That's not big deal.
No.
You are in material world. You're going to be bombarded by this nature. It's nothing, something shameful or whatever. But then what you do with it and how you channel it is another story.
Yes.
So by having understanding that I'm a loving, gentle soul, so do everyone else. This makes you appreciate everyone else. But also you're not denying yourself your feelings, So you can say to other people, I have to have this minute just to contemplate, take your steps back.
Yes.
To return to, take time out. It's okay to time out. It's beneficial for you and for me and for everyone else. Because in the end of the day, what you want? Love. And what is love? It's also to appreciate that that person just needed, a little bit time out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's child or adult, it doesn't matter, woman or a man.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay.
You're saying it's okay to feel anger.
Yeah.
Take some time and space, because that will help you to get rid of it quickly as well.
Correct.
And process it. Thank you very much. Anybody else want to share anything? Anyone? Okay. So how do you rid yourself of it? It's the reason I'm asking this question is because we get, I often see people get caught in this tug of war between, oh, I should never feel angry because it's an enemy of the mind. Versus, but I'm feeling angry and I want to give it space, but then how do I get rid of it? And we often hear about forgiveness as a way of getting rid of anger that we have not just held on to, but feels righteous, okay? It's when we speak to a friend and they're easily able to clarify for us our role in it, yes, it can be easy to drop the anger. When it's an anger, an unjust anger, it's fresh, or maybe it's not so strong. Sometimes taking space from it can also very quickly help us to get rid of it. Fresh anger is much easier to process, right? It's much easier to process something while it's fresh. It's malleable, it's movable. But when anger has been sitting for a long time, it turns into the mode of ignorance anger, right? Cold, repressed, sits into the very deep, aspects of our mind, of our heart, like a deep-rooted weed. And it chokes. It has an ability to choke the things around it. Even the devotional creeper. It can choke the devotional creeper. So this anger usually requires some process of forgiveness. And the reason it requires some process of forgiveness, because often the anger that we hold on to for longest is justified. It's justified. That is the anger that we find hardest to get rid of. And the easiest to hold on to is righteous anger. You mentioned righteous anger, right? When something unjust has happened, either to us or somebody else. And in our Krishna consciousness, we are tested on that. In our life, we are tested on that. We are tested to see that even if this world or even if the way Krishna's manifesting our devotional life to us feels unjust, will we get caught up in getting angry or trying to make rearrangements of Krishna's arrangement? Or do we gracefully accept Krishna's arrangement and do the best thing for our devotional life? You know, the reason I wanted to talk about this is one personality who has really been somebody that I've found great inspiration from, taken great inspiration from over the last few months is Maharaj Ambarish, ninth canto, the fourth and fifth chapter. He's also a king. And we hear about many personalities who are unoffendable. Haridas Thakur, for example, right? Sometimes we don't relate to personalities like Haridas Thakur because we're thinking, well, you know, he's an eternal associate of the Lord. He's chanting, you know, 300,000 names a day. This personality is clearly a saintly personality, removed from society. Of course, it must be easier to be unoffendable. But Maharaj Ambarish, he's fully in the world. He was a ruler of the entire planet at the time that he was ruling. And he was absorbed in his devotional service at the same time. He was making big decisions about worldly affairs. And he was extremely devotional and austere. Him and his wife both were equally matched. This is what's explained. So they were both very, very devotional. And they decided to keep a Ekadashi Vrat for one whole year. Okay? And they broke this fast, or they were due to break this fast in Vrindavan, in Kartik, during Kartik. Now, to break the fast, they also were fasting. I don't want to get into the detail too much, but really, you've got to see the kind of austerity he was doing to understand the normal circumstances of being unoffendable were really tested. Okay, so he was hungry. Him and his wife had been fasting. He'd fed everybody else. And they wanted to really break their fast at the right time in the proper way. So they'd been waiting a long, long time. And just as he was about to sit down and eat, who does Krishna arrange turns up at his door at the last minute? Durvasa Muni. Okay. So Durvasa Muni, he's a great saint and teacher for the impersonalists. And so he has many rituals and ablutions that he does before he does anything. So Maharaj Ambarish is very graceful. And he says, you know, yes, please, you must honor something. I'm not going to break my fast until you do. I will. And he says, okay. The Durvasa Muni says, okay, I'm going to go take my bath, do my ablutions, my meditations, and then I'll come. Now, he took a little bit longer than would ordinarily be the case. And the time for breaking fast was coming very rapidly. So Maharaj Ambarish, not wanting to upset the Durvasa Muni or not fulfill his vow, because the Brahmins had told him, you know, if you don't break your fast at this by this particular time, it's as if you haven't fasted, okay? And equally, he didn't want to break his promise. So in consultation, he had some water. He had some water. Quite fair, quite reasonable, right? He's not started eating. He's fulfilled his fast, and he's been respectful to the Durvasa Muni. He's done nothing really wrong. The Durvasa Muni, as we know, is often a catalyst for people's bhakti in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he comes back, and with his mystic ability, he knows that Maharaj Ambarish has broken the fast with water, and he becomes furious, not irritated, furious, furious. And he's so angry. You said you'd wait for me. You know, what kind of a personality are you? You're just so arrogant. You know, you just because you're a king, you just think you're so amazing. And, you know, you didn't wait for me and you broke your fast. And he got very angry. And he took today I will punish you. I will give you a punishment that will teach you a lesson. He took a tuft of his own hair, put a curse with that. And a curse born of envy. A curse born of envy, not blessing, a curse born of envy. And he turned this little piece of hair into a little fire demon. It was described little horns and made of fire, very ferocious, quite similar to anger. His anger manifested as this little demon. What did Maharaj Ambarish do? He didn't explain himself. He didn't go into a philosophical discourse on why it's okay to drink water. He didn't run. He didn't put his hands up. He did absolutely nothing at all. He stood there. Now, Maharaj Ambarish had pleased Krishna so much, pleased him so much, he had given him the personal protection of his Sudarshan Chakra. Okay, personal protection of his Sudarshan Chakra. So actually, when Maharaj Ambarish did absolutely nothing, Krishna couldn't tolerate it. And immediately the Sudarshan Chakra came, immediately, instantaneously, before Maharaj Ambarish or Durvashamuni, anyone could do anything, immediately the Sudarshan Chakra came and chopped this demon in half and finished him off. And then he made a beeline for, you know, he started to pursue Durvashamuni. And it's interesting because Durvashamuni was running for a whole year from planetary system to planetary system, okay? From one place to another. And Sudarshan Chakra, although he can just catch up in a split second, stayed close enough to Durvashamuni to heat up his neck and let him know, I'm still here. Okay, I'm still here. But not close enough that he destroyed him. Because Krishna had actually made this arrangement really to glorify Ambarish Maharaj and his devotion. Really to bring it to that peak. So Durvashamuni is going here and there and everywhere, and he goes to Brahma, he goes to Shiva. They say, look, we can't protect you from the Sudarshan Chakra. This is Vishnu's, you know, weapon. And we have no control over Vishnu's weapon. You have to go to Vishnu. So he goes to Vishnu, still with the Sudarshan Chakra, right there. Now imagine that, right there, one whole year. And Vishnu's like, I can't control my Sudarshan Chakra because I'm completely under the control of my devotees. Okay, your behavior was born of your own self-envy. Self-envy. Okay? Envious of the actual self. Right, because you're envious of your actual self, you got offended. He's done absolutely nothing wrong. Engaged in something really abhorrent, and you know you behaved offensively. So actually, the only person who can control Sudarshan Chakra is Ambarish Maharaj. You need to go to him. So the Durvashamuni falls at the feet of Ambarish Maharaj. You know how Ambarish Maharaj feels? He doesn't feel about time. It's about time. It took you 1 year to realize you've done something wrong. He didn't feel like that. He didn't have pity on him, like, oh, I should now have, you know, pity on this person. He's finally realized he's wrong. He didn't feel that either. He felt ashamed. He said, why are you falling at my feet? You've done nothing wrong. He still felt like Durvashamuni had done nothing wrong. If somebody pulled out a fire demon from their tuft of hair in front of you, when you've done nothing wrong, when you've done nothing wrong, you've had a sip of water, okay? You've had a sip of water. Would you be saying, oh no, I feel embarrassed that you're falling at my feet? No, come on. Let's be honest with ourselves, you know? He felt ashamed. He said, you've done nothing wrong. What is it that you need from me? And he said, no, please, please, just ask Sudarshan Chakra to stop. Stop chasing me. I'm so scared. I'm really sorry. I made a big offense and I didn't realize what a great personality you were. And actually, Ambarish Maharaj, after feeling ashamed, the first thing he did is he just fell at the feet of Sudarshan Chakra. And he said, if I've done any devotional service, if I've done anything pleasing, if I've been a good king, can you please just stop chasing the Durvashamuni? He hasn't done anything wrong. He's saying, can you believe that? Would you even in your mind say someone hasn't done anything wrong after they've created a fire demon to kill you? Going that far, he hasn't done anything wrong. Sudarshan Chakra is so pleased by these prayers and he stops. He slows down and he stops. This ends all very beautifully, you know. It ends very beautifully. They have their prasadam together. Ambarish Maharaj is happy. He gets to honor his promise. But actually, it describes in Bhagavatam that Ambarish Maharaj actually waited one whole year. He did not break his fast. He kept his promise. He just survived on sips of water. That's it. Why am I sharing this? Why am I sharing this? We often hold on to righteous anger because we think that it is going to help us to make good decisions. If we've seen an injustice or experienced an injustice, remembering and holding on to the anger that it causes us is going to protect us in some way. Often, we will take to a political cause, a social cause, out of seeing that this is unjust, I want to help. But we often, you know, hold on to anger to fuel our motivation to continue to support the cause, right? Thinking it's necessary. Actually, you know, if you look at, they've studied this. If you look at causes where people's, you know, they're standing up for rights, whatever rights it is, human rights, gender rights, race rights, and where people hold on to their anger, and they're mostly vocalizing their anger on various platforms. I'm so angry. Why were they so racist? Why were they so sexist? Why were they so this, you know? They often actually don't do much. They just shout and scream. Often the people who are busy doing something about it are actually quite calm. Because what does anger do? It bewilders our intelligence. Okay, anger is not a good motivator, nor is it known to be a bringer of clear thoughts. Maharaj Ambarish, if he ruled his kingdom based on anger, he would not have been as effective. He is proof that actually being unoffendable keeps you in a clear state of mind. Now, being unoffendable is a very, it's a natural state for us. That's our natural state. And it might feel very far away. But what we can get better at is ridding ourselves of anger. In its fresh state, speak to someone, understand it. You know, maybe take some space. See, what is this anger trying to tell me? But I don't need to hold on to it longer than necessary. Because when anger sits there longer than necessary, then it's toxic and intoxicating. People also get intoxicated by their anger. They thrive on anger. They feel like, yeah, you know, I'm an angry person. That's my identity. You know, it makes me walk in a particular way, look a particular way. Nobody comes near me when I'm angry. And so they keep like a vibration of anger around them, right? It becomes part of the identity. It's because there's a power with anger, isn't there? Like you feel that fire of anger can make people feel to some degree safe because people are threatened by that feeling. Whether it's a cold shoulder, when cold shoulder keeps people away, and that's cold anger, right? Or whether it's hot and fiery. So it's a power, so it's intoxicating and toxic if it stays longer than necessary. And actually, as Vaishnavs, we can really work on observing ourselves to see. And I found this very helpful to observe and take a very honest inventory at how often do I jump on that, you know, spectrum of anger, even if it's just irritability, a day, for good reasons. For wrong reasons, it's easy for, oh, I was stupid to get angry about that, let me drop that. But for good reasons like, oh, this person's done something wrong, I have a right to be angry. Or this person's not behaving the way they should and I'm responsible for them. I have a right to be angry because my anger's going, thinking where our anger's going to change them. When has our anger really changed anyone? And it certainly hasn't, you know, done anything beneficial for us. So just even this observation, how often am I getting angry? Just having a very honest inventory and look at that for ourselves can really help us to realize, wow, I really put myself in a state of toxicity more times than I need to. Because actually, if we stop and we reflect on it and we look at the things that we're getting irritable about, because often if you look in familiar relationships, the reason distance is created is one irritability is added to another, is added to another, is added to another. And you add 1 millimeter to another, to another, to another, to another, it becomes centimeters of distance, then meters of distance, then miles of distance. Okay? So these little irritabilities we hold on to that we feel are justified, how often do we get them? Really, we can stop and think, do I want to expend my energy in that? Am I going to achieve my goal by being angry about this? Because actually, I can do a far better job by not being angry about it, right? And then you'll better start to see that, oh, I actually, when I'm irritable or angry, I experience it like this. That's a sign that, you know, I'm getting angry. Maybe you clench your jaw when you're stressed, when you're irritable, when you're offended, when you're upset, you clench your jaw. Maybe you smile. Maybe you smile more when you're irritated or angry. You know, how do you experience it? How do you express it? But most importantly, how do you hold it? And as we get better at dropping the little righteous angers, okay, the little righteous, there's always righteous anger because our version is always the right one, isn't it? Our version is always the right one. To us, our perspective is always the right one. Even though Krishna tells us a million times, and he tells Uddhav this, Uddhav asks him, there are so many different perspectives on things. Which one is the right one? Krishna says all of them. Krishna says all of them, because each person will see the same thing in many different ways. And everybody's right. But if you get caught up in the game of right and wrong, then it leads to your downfall. Okay? So in any given situation, there's many intentions and there's many perspectives. But ultimately, the presiding perspective and intention is Krishna's. Ultimately, it's his. And his plan does prevail. It's to what degree am I getting on board? And when we're angry, it blocks us from seeing that. You know, it's very hard to chant japa with an angry heart, whether that's old anger or hot anger, because it hardens the heart. Maharaj Ambarish was, his heart was soft. You know, Trinadapi Sunichena, this verse, being more tolerant than a tree. Tolerance is not that I'm, through gritted teeth, going to just cope with whatever you send me. This tolerance is this, it's coming to me, what is, I trust Krishna so much that whatever arrangement has been made is so that I can just run to him quickly. Okay, so how long do we hold it? If we find ourselves that we've held things for longer than we needed to, by getting into the practice of dropping the small angers, it becomes easier to face the big, long, angry elephant in the room in your heart that you're not talking about. And then you can go through the process of forgiveness. Now, I don't know if we've got capacity to go through the whole, we don't have capacity to go through the whole understanding of the process of forgiveness, but I can just very quickly just share with you just some stages of it. So actually, Parishan Prabhu actually talked about the first stage already, discovery. If we've been holding on to something for a really long time, there's a discovery stage. What happened? How did it affect you? You can do this with a friend, you can do it on a piece of paper. And how did it affect you in every area of your life? Emotionally, your thoughts, your behaviors, your worldview, physically, the costs, all of these things. Just a chance, just let it all out. Okay, that maybe you haven't let yourself have that discovery stage, or maybe you felt like, okay, this incident happened such a long time ago, I've not done it yet, why do I need to do it now? Or maybe it's too late. No, do it for yourself. Bring it to the surface, okay? When something is deep-rooted, you bring it to the surface. Then bringing yourself to a decision, do I want to even forgive? Do I want to let go of this anger? Do I want to let go, drop this desire to see the other person punished? So listing the pros and cons of deciding to forgive, and if you did forgive, what might change in you, in the situation, in the person, but most importantly in you. The third stage is understanding and processing. So looking at the other person in a new way. You know, what might have they been going through at the time that this happened? Or what may have they been through in the past? We're not looking for justification, we're just looking for understanding. It's not an excuse for their behavior, but an understanding. And by getting that perspective on them, has the way we feel changed at all? Has it changed at all? It might not have, it may have, you don't know. And then healing and growing is the last stage. You know, how has going through that benefited? Because there's always a benefit to everything. Sometimes we don't see the benefit because we hold on to the pain. And what has forgiving or choosing to forgive positively changed? Because even, you know, often just like before you start a run, even thinking about the run gets the body ready for running, doesn't it? Right? More blood sent to the muscles, your mind becomes sharper, you get in the mode of, I'm already a runner, right? So similarly, even just choosing to forgive someone already puts us in that space where we're just ready to drop that anger, that resentment. So it's like when you're ready to put down a box, a heavy box that you're carrying, right? When you're ready to put that box down, your muscles are already starting to relax. You're already starting to experience the elation of not having to carry that heavy burden, right? So these stages are things we can apply for the anger which we've been holding on to for a long time. And ultimately what happens is, as we become better at ridding ourselves of anger, the heart becomes lighter, it becomes softer. It becomes easier for us to be even less resistant when we do feel a bit of anger, we take it for what it is, we recognize what it's trying to tell us, and we drop it. But eventually, as the process of chanting, deity worship, hearing, and reading takes more and more effect, because our mind is has less and less blocks, our heart is less and less heavy, then actually what happens is that transformation of the heart takes place, where our natural, our real self comes to the surface, that unoffendable self comes to the surface, that self which has the eternal protection of Krishna's Sudarshan Chakra. Okay, so there is nothing wrong with anger, being angry, experiencing it. We have a human mind, so we are going to experience human anger. Transcendental anger doesn't come from the human mind. And yes, human anger can be dovetailed in the protection of others. But when it's held onto, even in the protection of others, it even ends up hurting those other people, because we don't serve them in the best way we can, because we don't think clearly. Does that make sense? So, just like Lord Chaitanya is making arrangements for Maharaj Pratapurudra to reach that peak of his love, so that when they meet, it is the most ecstatic experience. Krishna is doing exactly the same thing for all of us. And none of his love is dependent or exclusive to or pushed away by any of our human attributes or circumstances, nor is it attracted by any of those human attributes. But he will always make an arrangement the minute we turn to him and say, you know what, I'm interested again. Can we reconnect? Okay, let me make the arrangements. But some of the arrangements might seem harsh or unfair and even contradictory to other things that I say. But just trust me, that day will come. As he says to Arjun, don't fear, lean into me. Abandon your ideas of religion and what it should be like. And I'll protect you. Don't worry. We have a few minutes for your comments, questions, corrections. Hare Krishna. Do you want the mic? Can somebody please...
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the class. Could you share a little bit about the relationship between anger, forgiveness, and compassion? Because I'm thinking back to some examples of when I'm holding on to that anger or resentment, and that might be blocking me from being as compassionate as I can be to that person, and then maybe that even also manifests in other relationships as well, just generally my compassion.
Thank you, that was a really nice question. Yes, again, you know, sometimes we overly rely on anger to be our motivating force, because we're not sure what the other option would be. But actually, when we drop anger, we make way for motives like compassion. Because actually, especially when we get angry for a rightful reason, especially in the protection of someone else, we do so because we care. But the anger blocks the care. And we are by nature caring. There's a big caring part of us, even on our human aspect. Human beings, we love to care. We love to love. And so, yeah, anger, any of the enemies of the mind, they block the best motives, the best natural motives that we have, both in our human psychology and our divine psychology. So, yes, this is a very nice point, that when we start to drop anger, we can do all of our services from a position of compassion. We can protect with compassion and love. And, you know, there's a reason why Maharaj Ambarish could single-handedly rule an entire planet, because he wasn't disturbed by the wrongdoings and rightdoings. And he was able to see through things clearly and take strong decisions. Yeah? Anyone else?
Hare Krishna, I was wondering if you wouldn't mind to go just mention those few steps, how to deal with it again.
Forgiveness?
Yes, I think I missed some of them.
Sure.
Just briefly.
Okay, so it's four stages. The first one is discovery. So that's what happened and how it affected you. So everything, look at a 360 degree view of how it's affected you. You know, sometimes we're not honest about how things have affected us because we think if it's affected me, I'm in Maya. But if we know what our Maya is, then we can let it go. If we don't know, we just hold on to it. The next stage is deciding to forgive. So that's a process, listing the pros and cons of forgiving and what might change if we were to forgive. So we haven't forgiven yet. Then understanding the other person through a different lens, maybe understanding a little bit about, so evoking some compassion. What might have this person been through to behave the way they did? What were they going through at the time that they did it? And then by understanding them in a different way, has anything changed in my heart? And then the fourth stage is healing and growing. So has this benefited me? What was Krishna trying to teach me? Have I developed any strengths by going through it? Is there something I can celebrate about what I went through? And what has forgiving or choosing to forgive positively actually changed for us? That's all part of the healing and growing process. Because everything comes to us. Krishna communicates to us even through the enemies of the mind. There's nothing in our life that Krishna can't use to tell us that he loves us. Nothing. In fact, he can even work through our failures, as a good friend told me yesterday. So, is that okay?
Thank you so much.
It's a sutra. It came from Adhokshaja Prabhu.
It came from?
Adhokshaja Prabhu. He's a wonderful Sankirtan devotee from Scotland. And he said, the first thing to remember is, you spot it, you got it.
Yeah.
So whatever we see is just a reflection of maybe what's inside us.
Yeah.
So you spot it. If you see the good in somebody, that's good. So play on that. Look at that. But if you see the negative part, the thing, that's part of you.
Mm.
So that's a good way to go, that actually we should be looking the good in somebody.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think sometimes people struggle if they've been hurt by seeing the good in another person or somebody's exploited that. And this is why I think most people do end up having to go through some sort of process of forgiveness. I think Prabhuji here had a question.
Thank you. I was wondering about what's the difference between jealousy and envy?
So let's go through actually the spectrum. So comparison is easy, right? What has this person got? What have I got? And, you know, actually when our comparison circle is small, which it used to be before the days of digital media, when our comparison group is small, then that comparison often just really helps us to grow and be better. But when you widen the net of comparison to an unrealistic space and time, you are involving people in your life now and comparing yourself to people who probably were never part of your original karmic blueprint, right? And so one can then become lost and misled, and this can create anxiety or unrealistic targets, right? Because we're comparing ourselves to something that really quite for us is probably karmically far away. We never asked for it in this lifetime, but we are now asking for it by planting those seeds. And so it enters more than into Rajagun, which is jealousy. I want what you have. I want what you have. But when it gets more mode of ignorance, it's I want what you have, but I don't want you to have it. That's envy. Okay? So I want what you have, but you can't have it. So I want to take away what you have from you. So that's why envy's more aggressive, more toxic. Our heart actually really has to be... But when we stop comparing, then naturally jealousy and envy, they don't rear their ugly head because comparison is the very root cause of it. So there's no need to compare because we'll always find someone better and we'll always find someone worse. So yeah, do you understand the spectrum? Sure.
I remember before I read, it was an autobiography actually of Steve Jobs, and he said that arguments were the most productive moments he had sometimes. So I was wondering, is that actually, just your perspective on that?
For the life that he had, it probably was. For the goal that he had, it probably was. But so you have to decide, do you want to be like Steve Jobs or do you want to be like Srila Prabhupada? Mataji, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I just wanted to add that Srila Prabhupada mentioned it, that it's simple for the simple. And the first wonderful thing, you have to find out, you want to be behaving in a false ego, in a real ego, you know, and that's the big difference. When you are real ego, you have no agenda.
Simple. Other than to serve Krishna, right? And simple. His devotees, yes.
For that reason, as you said, the Trinata Pisunichana, you constantly be able to chant Hare Krishna. Mm. You have to understand that in material world, it's already a hell place. Everyone here gonna make hellish activities.
Yeah.
You know? So what do we blame and who do we blame? We have to recognize wrong is wrong. Sin is sin. There's no question of that. Yeah? But nevertheless, you have to understand this is the place for this. And that's why, how can you constantly blame? The fingers points at you.
Yes, right? We are back at us.
So
absolutely.
Whole point is, if you have a problem with something, we are lucky. We got Radha Gokulananda. Go there. Pray for that person. That they are in this hellish condition and they're still suffering in this predicament, you know, and let yourself to heal, because as you mentioned it wonderfully, it is toxicity which gonna cause you a cancer and diseases. So you have to have a conscious choice, or you want to be a healthy in Krishna service, or you want to be sick and hoarding your miseries, and as you mentioned very wonderfully, to be intoxicated by your own sufferings. That's a wonderful point, you know, that we are cutting ourselves every single day. We are the ones abusers to ourselves. Instead of 1, 2, 3, chant Hare Krishna, embrace each other, and just eat prasadam, and you will be okay, totally.
Thank you so much, Mataji. May I leave you with the three P's of Krishna consciousness? Can we carry on? Do you want to carry on putting it? If devotees, okay, you both have a question, so you can decide who goes first.
Because part of our goal is to be more tolerant than a tree, humbler than the blade of grass. Sometimes we see devotees, maybe they allow themselves to be abused or something, and then they get problems, and then when it all comes out, people say to them, well, that was your fault because you let that happen to yourself. You didn't stand up for yourself. And it's difficult for devotees to navigate this because on the one hand, their goal seems to be to tolerate and be humble. But then when it goes wrong, they get the blame and say, well, you tolerated it. You shouldn't have tolerated it. So how do devotees navigate that?
That's a really good question. Tolerance doesn't mean allowing inappropriate treatment to go on. This is the thing, we misunderstand what this topic of tolerance, you know. Tolerance it has so many different aspects to it, and we tend to cling to endure, just endure it and suffer. We often think about that, right? That's what a lot of people equate tolerance to. But actually, really, when we actually tolerate, and particularly tolerate without taking offense to it, without holding on to it, we are able to then more clearly align ourselves with, well, hang on a minute, yes, I'm tolerating this for the time being whilst I work out how to navigate away from this, because this is not helping this person or this situation or myself, okay? But we do so in a way that we're, but doing so in a way that we're not too invested in the outcome. Sometimes we get so invested in the outcome of our action that we find it easy. I'll just sit and grin and bear it and tolerate it, because actually if I try and change it and it doesn't work, I think that would be heartbreaking for me. Does that make sense? Like avoidance of success for fear of failure. And so tolerance can become a very easy get-out clause for us, saying, oh, I'm going to be tolerant and humble. But actually, a humble person is brave. A humble person is able to do and speak the truth and do what's right because they're not bound by often the fears that keep us in a inappropriate situation. If anyone's ever been mistreated and abused and they've done the work to really look at what kept them there, yes, there's manipulation, yes, there's gaslighting, yes, there's all of these kinds of things, okay? But at the root of it, often there's an attachment that we have, a fear that we have, because attachment can be born of fear as well, not just affection, that is keeping us there because we have some sort of secondary gain that we're getting from it. It may be position, it may be a sense of identity, it may be a sense of purpose, it may be something like that, you know? And we're often not willing to sacrifice that, because we seem to still think that having that sense of identity or that role or that purpose is going to be conducive or necessary for our Krishna consciousness. And that Krishna won't make other arrangements for us. So tolerance isn't inaction. Tolerance is intelligent action, really. Like I said, you know, we've been talking about this world as an offensive place. How do we become unoffendable in an offensive world, right? It does require us to have some understanding and mastery over our feelings of anger and hurt, and expectations being unmet and unmet needs, and actually taking responsibility for, you know, Krishna's given me my own plane to fly. The first human being Krishna's given me to look after is myself. So, yeah, you're right. It can be difficult to navigate, especially when there's a culture, like a community culture of framing tolerance in a way or endurance in a particular way or humility in a particular way. But this is why we seek out association that can help us to clarify, even if it may not be in our immediate company. Yeah, we need to diversify who we hear from. Is that okay? Prabhu? Hare Krishna.
Yeah. So it's about processing the anger. So
processing the anger.
So you see a situation and you experience anger within, and then you have that presence that you can reason it. So you can see that why this is happening.
Yes.
This person is like
you
this.
Can reason
so
it, yeah.
Maybe, you know, it's her habit or it's his this. And you are able to reason it and don't react.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not reacting. But can still that anger remain within? I mean, is reasoning good enough to dodge the anger, or I'm still holding it?
That's up to you, because sometimes we will understand why someone's being a certain way, but we're still holding on to they shouldn't be that way.
Mm.
Now, where we can justify righteously why they shouldn't be that way, we are more likely to hold on to it. Sometimes though what happens is, and this happens very often, is because we understand why someone's doing something, we think that then that means I have to let it continue. But understanding someone is doing something wrong doesn't mean understanding why they're doing it doesn't mean it's justified, that it's okay. So again, we get caught in that it's either this or that. But it can be both. I understand why you're doing this. It's still not right. So I got angry about it. I've let go of the anger, but we still need to correct this. What's a good way to do this?
So basically, you're not reacting in anger.
Yes.
You're holding on that. And later on, whenever things are better, you still raise that point.
Absolutely.
And clarify and say, this is not the...
Absolutely. So but drop your anger first.
Drop your anger first, but don't hold it. Clarify it.
Yes.
Yeah, clarify it.
But you might not ever get clarification. Do you see what I mean? But if you drop your anger, you will be in a better place to know what you want to do next and what you can do next. Okay?
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.